Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the new blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturday mornings, so if you haven't read Wednesdays yet, it's sitting right there for you at the top of the page. But while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, we greatly appreciate that. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, you can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three E's.
All right, well, I haven't been winning any FanDuel money, Dan, but my scores have been improving. So I'm hoping that's the consistent thing, and we're going to keep going, and hopefully I'll get a good score tonight. But here's what I came up with for the wonderful 705 Main League. I'm going to go with John Lester. He's going to cost me $10,000, but, you know, it's a good matchup against a young White Sox team. So I think there's an opportunity for Lester to put up really big numbers, kind of like Arrieta did last night. You know, if he scores in that range, I would be pretty happy with it. I think Arrieta ended up right around the 50-point total. So if Lester's right around there, I'll be happy with that. Obviously, you spend big money there, you got to save at other spots. So I'm looking to save at catcher here a little bit. I'm going with Tucker Barnhart of the Reds. He only cost me $2,100, and he's hitting eighth in their lineup tonight. I ended up with another red here at first base. I like the Joey Votto matchup. I actually like the entire matchup of the Marlins-Reds game, so you'll see I have three Reds and two Marlins. But I spent $3,600 on Joey Votto, who's hitting third in the Reds lineup tonight. Second base, I went with Carlos, and I'm going to go with Azuja of the Padres. He cost me $2,400. He's hitting second for them. Third base, I went with Derek Dietrich of the Marlins. He cost me $2,200. He's hitting sixth in their lineup tonight. Shortstop, I'm going to go with Addison Russell tonight. You know, it's always a tough call. He hasn't been great this year, but, you know, I like his matchup. I kind of think he's due. He cost me $2,600. He's hitting eighth in the Cubs lineup tonight. Then, it's just one of those weird things. I ended up with big money to spend in the outfield. I got Giancarlo Stanton of the Marlins. Now, last time I used him on Sunday, he was a complete dog for me, so I'm hoping he bounces back. I think he's homered every day that I didn't have him in the lineup. He cost me $4,400. Of course, he hits second for the Marlins because that's where Sabermetrics tells you to put these guys. I went with A.J. Pollock of the Diamondbacks. He cost me $3,900. He's hitting second for them tonight. And then to round out my outfield, I ended up with Billy Hamilton, whose price tag is actually up to $3,800, but like I said, I had a lot of money left. You know, it's always nice to get a leadoff hitter in there. Obviously, you're not going to get a lot of power out of Hamilton, but, you know, it's one of those things where if you get 2 for 3 with a stolen base or two, he's worth the price tag, and of course, he's leading off for the Reds. So here you go. The quick recap ends up being John Lester pitching, Tucker Barnhart catching, Joey Votto at first, Carlos Azuza at second, Derek Dietrich at third, Addison Russell at short, and then the outfield is Giancarlo Stanton, A.J. Pollock, and Billy Hamilton. Like I mentioned, this is for the 605, excuse me. It's 705 Eastern. The 605 Main, you got just a shade over 30 minutes to get your lineup ready. So, you know, good luck. I hope it works out. And, you know, I hope you do better than I have and you actually win some money. So we'll have to see how it goes, but I'm hoping for better luck tonight. So there we go. You know, all right, Dan, we had some, well, I guess we'll call them afternoon games. I think technically some of them, So it actually started with AMR time, but we had the Toronto Blue Jays beat the Oakland A's 8-4. Roberto Osuna got the win there, and Liam Hendricks took the loss. Cleveland, the Indians beat the Angels 2-1. Trevor Bauer pitched a nice game, got the win. J.C. Ramirez took the loss, and then Cody Allen picked up the save. And then the really odd game of the morning here, the Nationals put up 15 runs on the Brewers. They won 15-2. Max Scherzer got the win. Michael Blazek took the loss, and boy, did he get knocked around. I had that game on, Dan. It was the MLB Network game, and Blazek gave up back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs. Brian Goodwin, Wilmer Defoe, Bryce Harper, and Ryan Zimmerman all took him deep. Then Daniel Murphy flew out, and Anthony Rendon homered after that. So it was just a dreadful pitching performance for Blazek and, you know, the Brewers. And, you know, I'm sure they're happy to see the Nationals leave town. I think they lost 2 out of 3 to them, and they've just been just scuffling since the All-Star break. You know, I mean, I guess, Dan, we always said we were wondering if the Brewers would come back to the field. They've obviously done that because the Cubs are in first place now. Do you see them regaining some of their momentum? I mean, they're 2-8 in their last 10, and I mean, they've just been horrible. You know, I mean, you got anything you think could right the ship for them?
You Darvish?
Yeah. Next. I don't know. Did you see a stat line from last night?
No.
let me hunt it down here for you real quick, and you can tell me if you would be willing to give up the prospects it would take to get Mr. Darvish after his really, really bad outing last night. I can tell you in the game, Dan, here's how it went. The Marlins scored 22 runs. The Rangers did put up 10. Obviously, they didn't score them all off of Darvish. But here's what you did, Dan. He went 3 2/3 of an inning, gave up 9 hits and 10 runs. They were all earned. He walked 2, struck out 5, gave up 2 bombs. So I believe I saw that after the All-Star break, his ERA is like 5.25. So he hasn't done a ton since the All-Star break. He took the loss in that game, no surprise there. I know he's heading into free agency. Obviously, he's still you still got to consider him kind of that, you know, top of the rotation guy. You know, you'd like to just kind of write it off as a bad outing, but was it, or this is 2 out of his last 5 outings that he's been shelled. You know, the Red Sox got him for 7 4 1/3, but the outings in between them were really good. Is he worth? Because they're obviously they're going to look for a top prospect. Is he worth that to you? If you're a contender or a pseudo contender, are you willing to part with that guy?
There's the good old change of scenery theory, but I mean, at this point, I think you're almost better off waiting to see how he goes in the market next season. But kind of going back to the Cubs and the Brewers, the Cubs have definitely been on pace, and, they should be after coming up against, they took 2 out of 3 with St. Louis, who, no matter where they are in the standings, those are always pretty good games. But these are teams they should have beat. They should have beat the White Sox. They should beat them again tonight. But with the Brewers, they start up again. The Brewers really, when they came back into this, they went after the All-Star break. They won the first 2 against Philly, but then went on a 16 losing streak between the Pirates and Philly. So, you know, that's what really hurt them. And these two teams, they should have taken at least four of these games. You know, so they had a really bad run against in Pennsylvania. Maybe it's something about that state. And then, you know, they took the first one against Washington and lost the last two. Think about it. The Cubs have yet to prove that they can handle Washington either. But the Brewers and the Cubs start up against each other tomorrow, and then the Brewers take on the Cardinals in the first of August, and then you have the Rays, and then they do their rivalry series with the Twins, you know, the four games straight in Minnesota and, you know, back to Milwaukee. Then they have the Reds, Pirates, Rockies, and Giants. So, I mean, they've kind of got an up-and-down schedule, and this month, I mean, with the chase between the two of them, this month is really going to be huge in determining where the Rockies will play. But, you know, after the Brewers, the Cubs head out, they get a day off, and then they head out to Arizona to take on the Diamondbacks. Or no, I'm sorry. They're here at home. Oh, wait, this is confusing. But, yeah, they're at home. So they get a day off, and Arizona comes in, and then Washington comes in. So, I mean, between these two series, you kind of don't – it can go either way for both of these teams. And I think either one of them will continue to fight. But the Cubs seemingly have a better I would say maybe the easier schedule in August. They have six games against the Diamondbacks, you know, add three to the Washington. But after that, it's the Giants, Reds, Blue Jays, Reds, Phillies, Pirates. And then they finish off the month and go into September with the Braves. So, I mean, in all likelihood, the Cubs should take off this month, and they should leave the Brewers behind. And I don't think they need a
you know, I mean, now, they're probably going to add a veteran guy so they can send Caratini down and he can get regular bats, which makes sense. But, you know, for a team like the Brewers, you know, instead of chasing a Darvish or a Verlander or something like that, since you really are just starting your rebuild, I mean, this is a huge step for them. What, you know, if you're going to go out and you're going to get a frontline pitcher, isn't it better to go try to get a guy like Sonny Gray, who's at least controllable for a few more years? You know, I would think he would be the guy because, you know, he kind of fits the role. It's like, okay, you get him this year, but he's still going to be there where, you know, if you bring a Darvish in, you're probably not re-signing him if you're Milwaukee. You know, you're not going to ink the kind of deal he's going to get. You know, do you see them going that route, looking for a, you know, what would be a younger starter instead of the, you know, the grizzled veteran type of guy that, you know, a Verlander or, you know, a Darvish would be?
Well, I mean, when you say it in the arms of or the realm of Darvish, I think that's pretty much out of the question. Maybe not out of the question, but just not doesn't fit with what they're doing, like you said. When you look at Sonny Gray, you know, I think the difference between him and Verlander is the money, obviously. You'll have Verlander for a couple more years, but, you know, do you want to take on that age? But then again, do you want to take on that risk of having Sonny Gray on your DL for at minimum a third of the time he's with you?
Yeah, you know, but I you know, just think with where they are, you know, it would make better sense if they're going to add, you know, if you're going to add a starter, he would be the guy to go after more than a, you know, I mean, I guess technically he is a veteran.
They do have a lot of young pitchers.
Yeah, Garza, who went on the DL yesterday, by the way.
Oh.
You know, just one of those fun Matt Garza things there.
I do think, you know, I agree with you that maybe Sonny Gray might be the smarter option, but I think you can go either way with one of them. It's just a matter of do you want to invest all that money in Verlander, especially almost half past 30.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think if they were In it a little more, you know, a Darvish would be okay, but at this point where they've dropped out of first and they're playing terribly, I can't see paying the pick for a guy you're going to have for, you know, August, September, and whatever's left in October if you, you know, you don't make it. I mean, the Rangers are probably going to be looking for, you know, not only multiple prospects, but probably one of your top five. So, you know, you're going to have to give up, you know, a lot to rent a guy for 2.5 months. And I just, you know, in a position where Milwaukee is, I just don't think that makes a lot of sense for him.
No, and I think it would only make sense if it was a team that would have the means to re-sign. You know, i.e. the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I mean, I forget where the Yankees are in this, but I know they're not really making a huge run for it, but, you know, they would be a team that could re-sign him. And, of course, you know, the Cubs, they definitely have the money, but do you want to go that route? I don't know.
Now, you know, we did have two trades completed today, and oddly, both of it was Tampa Bay sending prospects to get guys. The first trade they made, they completed this one real early this morning. The White Sox moving another guy. They sent left-handed reliever Dan Jennings. Now, he's one of those lefty specialists. He comes in, gets an out, and he's out of the game. He's headed to Tampa in exchange for first baseman Casey Gillespie. And then I guess Tampa decided since they traded a first baseman, they needed to go out and get another one, even though he was in the minor leagues. They went out and got your guy, Dan. We were talking about right before we went on. Lucas Duda will be joining the Tampa Bay Rays, and the Mets in return get a right-handed reliever by the name of Drew Smith. Now, Smith was the Rays, I believe I heard, 30th-ranked prospect. And Gillespie was their 17th ranked. So they moved a couple of, I don't know if that's considered high. I mean, nothing major there to get a couple veteran ads to help them down the stretch. These seem like kind of the things the Rays do. I mean, they seemed like two pretty good moves to me. I know, listening to the good old MLB Network, you know, they wanted them to go out and pay the price for Darvish or Verlander or Gray, and we know Tampa Bay isn't that type of team. You know, I like these two moves for them. What do you think, especially with one of them being your guy?
Can you repeat the second one? I went in and write it down for a second there.
The second trade was your guy Lucas Duda going there for minor league reliever Drew Smith, who's their 30th ranked prospect.
Well, then I heard that one. What was the other one?
The White Sox sent Dan Jennings there for their 17th ranked prospect, who's first baseman Casey Gillespie.
I heard of Gillespie. Supposed to be a good one. I don't know a whole lot about Dan Jennings. Is he released?
Yeah, he's that classic come in and get the left-handed guy out and then get out of the game. Here, I can show you. He's appeared in 48 games this year for the White Sox. He's pitched 44 and a third innings.
Wow.
So, you know, he's kind of like, you know, the Giants used to do that with, you know, Javier Lopez, and Mark Rachinski did that for a while. I pitching a little more now, but there are lefties like that. You know, Jennings is one of those guys. He comes in and gets the lefty out, and then they, you know, if there's not another lefty coming up, he's out of the game. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it works for Tampa. You know, we discussed the Duda trade a little bit more earlier before podcast, and I immediately thought that he would take a DH position, which I think would be good for him. And then, you know, the way the cycle goes, especially with American League, he can also play, you know, right if necessary and first base. So I think it's a win-win for them. I'm not positive on the control they have for him, but, I mean, he's still considerably young, isn't he?
Yeah, you know, looking at it here, yeah, it looks like the plan is Duda to become the DH. He'll be the left-handed inning DH, and Corey Dickerson will return to play left field. So,
yeah, and they can quite honestly make a run for it, and if they don't grab that second wild card spot, they can almost turn it into game 163, like they've done several times over the years.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like I said, I really like the moves. I mean, I think anybody who was honestly sitting around thinking the Rays were going to give up three or four of their prospects is, you know, they were just nuts. You know, that's not going to happen with a team like Tampa Bay. They don't do that. I can tell you, Dan, that Duda is only signed through the end of this year.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, he looks like, a little, pretty much a rent-a-guy. I would be shocked if the Rays brought him back. But, like, the reliever they gave up to get him, they got him from Detroit. Yeah, it looks like they picked him up from Detroit. He's pitched in high class A, double A, and triple A. So he's been through the system this season. He's got a 1.60 ERA in 31 games, and he's picked up 7 saves. So, looks like he spent the majority of his time in Tampa Bay's high class A affiliate, Charlotte. So that's what the Mets are getting in return. He's 23 years old.
A lot of kids coming out of Charlotte to be expected to be stars lately, huh?
So yeah, not a bad pickup for, you know, a guy obviously that, you know, they're only going to, you know, I'm pretty sure the Marlins, you know, the Rays are only gonna keep for, you know, this season. I would be really shocked if they turned around and, you know, tried to re-sign them. I mean, they're pretty set at the position, but to get Duda for half a season could be a big deal for them. So, and I know you tweeted this to me. I know on Tuesday when you and I were here, obviously a lot of talk about what the Giants are going to do. And Jeff Samardzija actually came out and said he's not willing to waive his no trade clause. So he's not going anywhere. We talked about, you and I didn't really think Johnny Cueto was going anywhere, but the one guy we thought that might get traded off the Giants was Eduardo Nunez. So, sure enough, on Wednesday, the Giants traded Eduardo Nunez to the Red Sox for 2 minor league right-handers. So, Dan, I know we're just two guys kind of talking on the phone here, but occasionally you and I know what we're talking about, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, you had brought it up and it's gone over, and like you said, and I do have to say, finally Samardzija got a win after how many countless games. So that was pretty nice the other night, and it did work out because whoever he was pitching against was taken out of the game while the game was still tied, and I have him also, so I didn't get the walk on that end. I got a win and 2 quality starts, so yay me. Yeah, I mean, you've got to wonder what that says for playing in San Francisco for Samardzija. Knowing he was here in Chicago and then, going down South Bend and playing football and baseball for Notre Dame. So it's interesting that he's happy to be where he is in San Francisco, which is a great city, great fans. So, like we had talked about, and, you mainly brought up that the most expendable player or movable player who came over from the Twins, I believe that was, and that was San Francisco. And now, San Francisco took Pablo and sent, their third baseman to Boston to play third base. So I find that interesting how the six-degree degree of the separation work on that little deal there. And how right you were.
Yeah, and I believe also, Nunez is the perfect, he's for the Twins, he was a super utility guy. Even for the Giants, he did play multiple positions this year. So if the Red Sox want to keep Rafael Devers in the majors, Nunez can play other positions. And he's, again, a perfect fit. He's only signed through the end of the season. The Red Sox kind of had the plan all along to give Devers the first shot at third base, in 2018. So, you bring Nunez in for, couple months here, and then, you can let him go. Or maybe if you like him enough, you bring him back as your utility guy, or just in case Devers doesn't work out, if you can get him on a solid deal. I'm assuming, now that he's, kind of set in a position and you know what he is, he's probably going to get a big bump over the $4.2 million he's making this year. But, hey, you never know, right?
Mm-hmm. It is a pretty interesting race, though, in the AL East, with Boston only a game ahead of the Yankees and 2.5 against the Rays, with the Rays only being, a game? Yeah, a game out of the wild card running. And then, be it as it may, the Yankees are taking on the Rays today in New York.
Yeah, and it's Chris Archer against CC Sabathia. So that should be a pretty interesting matchup. So
I was dying laughing though when I saw after we got off the air and Nunez was.
Yeah, the Yankees are another one of those teams that, every name comes up when Sonny Gray pitches. It's interesting here, there's a report that the Yankees, Cubs, Dodgers, Brewers, Indians, Pirates, and Royals all had scouts at the last Sonny Gray start, which I think was last night or two nights ago. So, obviously there's a lot of teams that are involved there. Of course, you heard the Astros name. They just didn't happen to be at that game, maybe. Apparently, the Yankees right now, though, are the only team that are not only willing to take Sonny Gray, but they're willing to take Yonder Alonso. They've had some issues at first base with injury, and, they decided to let Chris Carter go. And I'm wondering if maybe that's the deal that gets done. I mean, the Yankees do have a lot of quality prospects, but, I'm sure it's going to, it's a lot more difficult to trade just a first baseman. I mean, obviously, Duda went, but Duda's a big-time proven power hitter. I know Alonso's got 21 bombs this year, Dan, but this is the first year he's hit more than 9. So, I don't know if, I'm going to guess it's the baseball is why all of a sudden he's got power like a lot of guys do this season. So, I think he could be a tough commodity to move on his own. Do you think since the Yankees would be willing to package it, that they might pop out as the front runners for Sonny Gray? And, I mean, they do have a fantastic farm system as well.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have to do something, and I haven't really heard their name too much in the mix for Verlander. They've done the quote-unquote old guy thing before, and, if you're a Yankee fan, and Bob and I say we just got out from under all those big contracts that, shaped 30-plus-year-old men. Not there's anything wrong, and because I'm in that boat now. I don't think they'd be likely to go that route again, especially the trend is going younger. And then, one of the things I noticed just for the fantasy, I picked up Austin, I think it's Austin Romaine. I could be wrong on his last name. But he came up, he's a catcher first baseman. And he's been getting a little bit more regular time And I know the sense, but I think, like you said, being able to grab a guy who could play full time, as in Yonder Alonso, might help fill that void. And then for the A's, you know, and if you're the Yankees, I think one thing they've always been, and I know it really doesn't matter because the guys in the front office, you know, aren't still there, you know, dating back to the 70s and 80s. But with the A's, the way they've done business, for the Yankees, you can send some of your prospects over. And you never know. You might be able to make a move in 2 years and get that same guy back if he, you know, kind of bumps up and makes it into the majors, or he's still a, you know, quality high prospect in the next couple of years.
Yeah, you know, I think the difficult part, if, you know, if you're a Yankee fan, or, you know, if you're a, you know, just a, you know, kind of a baseball fan, I know it came out, I don't remember what day it was, that one of the pieces that the A's won back is they won a young center field prospect. And I, you know, I mean, when you look at the Yankees, I mean, just to have to give up, you know, a guy like Clint Frazier, you know, that would hurt. I mean, we've seen him play a little. He's, you know, he's looked really good. You know, that, but, you know, it may take something like that. You know, I mean, obviously Gardner and Ellsbury are really tied up in contracts. You know, they're kind of the last remaining of those albatrosses the Yankees put up their head there with, you know, or around their head with CeCe's deal, which, you know, is still kind of hanging around for them. But, man, you know, Frazier has looked so good. I don't know if I would want to include him like that. I'm going to pull up the Yankee prospect list here and see if they have any other outfielders on it. Because, you know, obviously it's going to take a top guy to get the job done, and you're not sending them Aaron Judge, so...
No, and I mean, they're number eight, and there's a couple of guys that in between Frazier and their number eight is Jorge Mateo. He's a shortstop outfielder. So, I mean, we know how that goes. You can play shortstop, you can play anywhere, right? Seemingly over the last couple of years, like, the guys who play short go to the center.
We don't know much about guys like, you know, Dustin Fowler is their number four guy. He is a triple A. So, you know, you wonder if, you know, maybe he could be an option. I mean, obviously he's got to be close to major league ready if he's up in triple A. You know, the other guy is, I'm going to guess it's Estevan. I'm going to guess this is Floria or Florio. Probably Floria because there's no O in it. You know, he's their number five guy. Now, he's just down in Class A. He's only 19 years old. So, you know, it looks like the Yankees do possibly have some other guys they could offer, you know, instead of having to throw Frazier in. And you just wonder if, you know, that could be the way to go, you know, just kind of go that route. Because, you know, they've already kind of come out and said they're not trading Gleyber. So, you know, he's there, and, you know, the way Clint Frazier has played, I don't think you'd want to deal him either, or at least show him so far. So, yeah, you know, maybe a guy like Torres, or it's Floria, or, you know, you mentioned, you know, Jorge Mateo, who plays shortstop and outfield, so, you know, that works out. He, you know, he was recently promoted to double A, where he's hitting .320. So, yeah, you know, maybe there, you know, there's some other options there that, you know, they could piece together or Oakland would accept. But, you know, I know everybody seems to think that Houston is the front runner, and apparently they're willing to give up Kyle Tucker to get Sonny Gray. But, yeah, you know, I think if Oakland wants to deal both guys, I just don't think you know, obviously Houston's not going to take on a first baseman. They don't need it, you know, where it's an actual need for the Yankees. I think maybe the Yankees can sneak in there and, you know, pull the deal off. Oh, let's see here. What was that other one I had saw that I wanted to ask about? Now, you know, Dan, it doesn't seem like there's a ton of starting pitching on the market, but it seems like you can get relievers just about anywhere. They had seven guys here that they think will be traded. I wanted to get your opinion to see if you thought they were going anywhere here. They start off with the first one is Addison Reed of the Mets. You know, he's doing the closing now with Familia out and, you know, all that fun stuff there. You know, the Mets obviously, you know, they're sellers. They're not going to give away any of their starting pitching, but they're sellers. Do you see Reed going somewhere, or you think he finishes up with the Mets?
I think obviously his deal is right, but we've got, these are on my calendar, we only have, 3 days left before, you know, the waivers fall through.
Yeah, the non-waiver, yeah. Well, technically 4, because today's the 27th, so.
Is he a specialist? I don't, you know, that one I don't know a whole lot about, or that guy, I should say.
Yeah, well, you know, he's been doing the closing. He was a setup guy last year, so, you know, he's been able to do both roles. You know, he calls for the White Sox for a while. You know, they shipped him off to Arizona. You know, I think he's set up in Arizona. I don't think he was their closer. So.
Yeah, I mean, where do you think he would be a good fit? Maybe setting up all the talks with the Cubs. It was like they're trying to get Rondon back in that position behind Davis.
It seems like a lot of teams are still, you know, kind of looking for relief help. You know, I know Arizona's name has popped up. I think it would be kind of humorous if he ended up going back to Arizona because they're the ones who traded him to the Mets. But, you know, it's not like the first time that's happened. But, you know, just, you know, pretty much, you know, all the contenders I know, I've even heard, even with the bullpen the Indians have, they mentioned possibly adding an arm because Boone Logan got hurt. So there could be some fits there. But all right, the next guy they have on the list here is Justin Wilson of the Tigers. You know, the big plus, of course, is he's left-handed where Reed's a righty. You know, he took over the Tigers closing situation after K-Rod kind of couldn't get anybody out. You know, his name's been mentioned. I know locally here they mentioned that the Cubs scouted both Verlander and Wilson to possibly see if they could get a package deal that even included Alex Avila. So I don't know. I guess they were just going to raid the Tigers roster and hope it worked out. But, you know, as a you know, good lefty who has now set up and closed, does Wilson find a new home, or you think the Tigers – end up with him at the end of the year?
No, I think he finds a new home.
All right. Now this name, geez, Dan, this next one, I have heard this name in trades so many times, it's not even funny. Brad Hand was the Padres' only All-Star. Fantastic in the setup role. I was really surprised they haven't plugged him in as a closer. But, you know, all the talk was they were going to deal him. They traded some pitchers earlier in the week, and he wasn't one of them. It ended up being Trevor Cahill and a couple other relievers. Do they finally find the deal they're looking for this guy? Or, you know, what goes on here? Is he just gonna, he doesn't have 2 years of control, it says here. So do they maybe just bring him back as the closer next year, or see if they can get more in the off season?
I think that they were smart. They would try to get more in the off season.
So let's see. All right, the next name they got here, this name has popped up recently here, A.J. Ramos, who's the closer for the Marlins. There was a lot of talk that Colorado was interested, but they just picked up Pat Neshek. But, you know, the Nationals' name has come up here, Dan. You know, they could still use some help at the back end of that bullpen. And the Cubs also, you know, the Cubs are in on every reliever just because they're looking for setup help. Do you see, you know, the Marlins have moved a couple of their bullpen pieces as it is. Do you see them moving one more and kind of restocking and sending Ramos off here?
No, I think they stick with him.
All right. Now, this one, you and I talked about this one early in the week. I think it might have been Monday. The two Orioles pitchers whose names keep coming up, Zach Britton and Brad Brock. They say the article here says the Dodgers are incredibly interested in Britton because they want to pair him as the setup guy to Kenley Jansen. That, of course, would be awesome if they did that, but we'll have to see. Do you have either of these guys going anywhere, or do they just end up finishing the season in Boston?
Boston or Baltimore? You're confusing me.
Or Baltimore, sorry. I got ahead of myself. I was reading the next article and Boston was in it. So, yeah, Baltimore. Do they end up in Baltimore, or do they both end up wearing different uniforms?
I think Britton stays. If anything, maybe the setup guy moves on. But, I mean, you still have a team that should contend. And they're all in that age group where they should be.
All right, the last name here, and this was an interesting one, Bud Norris of the Angels. Now, you know, Norris for, I don't know, probably the last 3 or 4 years was just a journeyman starting pitcher. But now all of a sudden he's found himself a new role as the Angels closer, and with the exception of, I think, last night or the night before, I don't remember which day it was, has done really well as a closer. Of course, you know, the Angels are in the division where, you know, the Nationals are running away, and they're sort of kind of hanging around in the wild card. But, you know, do you think Norris ends up with them by the end of the year, or does he move on?
I think he moves on.
So, yeah, I just thought it was interesting how well he's remade himself into, you know, into an actual legitimate closer. So I think I actually picked him up in one fantasy league early because he was really available and he's paid some dividends. So it's interesting. I know they have a couple other, you know, big arms that could probably fill in. You know, that, and I keep wondering if Houston Street's ever going to end up back there, or if he's just kind of done, if his career is going to be over or what. So, but yeah, those are seven relievers that they think could end up, you know, and end up being moved here. So I'm just kind of interested to see what you thought, or, you know, if it actually happens. So, they have, yeah, that was pretty much, that was it for their cool trade stuff that I saw. I don't think they've made any other trades since you and I have been talking, so I think we're okay. So, yes, and, you know, luckily the Yankee, almost called it. I keep wanting to call them the Devil Rays lately. I don't know. The Yankee Rays game is started, so I've got that. Yeah, I know. I keep, you know, that's just kind of how it goes. So, you know, that's what we do, right? We offend everybody and all that other fun stuff that goes on. So. But yeah, I did see Josh Donaldson actually homered today. So I was surprised. I was wondering do you think that maybe gets him out of his slump, or you know, could that wake him up? Oops.
I mean, maybe, but does it really matter at this point with Toronto?
No, I don't think, at this point, yeah, I don't, you know, they're not going anywhere. I mean, it's been kind of a bum year for them. They did have an oddity today in their game that was just the strangest thing. It was another one of those odd umpire situations, and he made a couple, you know, really close ball strike calls that could have went either way. They ended up going against the Blue Jays pitcher. It was Marcus Stroman. And, you could tell, he was unhappy. So, and, the dugout was too. They started chirping. Well, the Blue Jays manager gets tossed. You know, John Gibbons gets run. And then the next pitch, again, it's another borderline ball or strike, and he calls it a ball. And Stroman is talking, more or less to himself, but at the same time to the umpire. He gets ejected. Russell Martin turns around to say something to the umpire, and he gets tossed. This ump threw out three Blue Jays in a matter of about 2 minutes. And I was just really mad. Somebody's got to cut this guy off because he's just out of control. The Blue Jays did go on to win the game, but it was just kind of nuts. And then I don't know if you caught this one, but last night, did you see Adrian Beltre get thrown out of the Rangers game by any chance?
No, I heard about it this morning.
Yeah, it seemed, it was like the stupidest thing. I don't understand why all of a sudden the umpire decides to enforce the on-deck rule when Adrian Beltre is there, but he kind of starts bitching at him about not being in the on-deck circle. So Beltre actually picks up the circle they use and moves it, and the ump throws him out of the game. Now, this ump's name was Jerry Davis, and this was incredible stupidity on his part. When you make a decision like this, you've got to kind of realize the situation around you. This was a game that ended up, the Rangers got beat 22-10. The only reason there were any fans left in the building was because they wanted to see Beltre hit, because he's, I think he's three hits or four hits away from 3,000. So I don't understand why this idiot deprived them of that. It was just pure stupidity out of this umpire. And again, this guy's name was Jerry Davis. I don't know, maybe he was just having a bad day. Maybe he just wanted to get the game over with because it was such a blowout. But, yeah, all of a sudden they decide to enforce the on-deck rule. Dan, when was the last time you actually saw a batter stand in the on-deck circle?
I don't even. It's about the same time I seen the third base coach get in trouble for not standing in there. Third base box.
Right. It was literally the dumbest thing. I don't know. I'm guessing obviously this guy has a grudge against Beltre, or something like that. But yeah, it was just like, you can see him kind of harping at him, and Beltre, it's almost like he doesn't know what's going on. He wants to get a good view of the pitcher. He's checking out what's going on, and the ump continues to harp at him. So he moves the on deck circle, and the umpire throws him out while he's looking down. It took him a minute to realize he was thrown out. Then, of course, Jeff Banister came out and got his 2 cents in, and he got tossed. So, it was nice to see him, defend his player against stupidity like that, because that's all it was. I mean, you got a guy who's going to be a future Hall of Famer. He's closing in on just this huge milestone that, who knows if we'll ever see this again. I mean, with the way players go now, you just don't know. So yeah, let's throw them out in a blowout.
But I mean, do you find it odd that you know, maybe the season's too long for these old guys behind the plate. No offense, but, I mean, we've seen, like, a quick rash of ejections over the last week or two. All, you know, throughout the game, I mean, Chris Bryant gets thrown out for an umpire who doesn't know the strike zone. You know, you said three Blue Jays. No wonder Marcus Stroman didn't get me a win last night, and he was only in for five. The three guys, I mean, is it too much humidity, too hot for them? They can't take the heat, so they're stuck in the kitchen, and instead of adapting, they're just throwing guys out because they have a short temper now, short fuse.
Yeah, well, oddly, the even hotter thing about Beltre is it was a base ump that threw him out. I think it was the first base ump. But yeah, today you could just tell, and I don't know who the home plate umpire was in the Blue Jay game today, but yeah, he just once John Gibbons got into it with him, you could just tell he wasn't taken anymore. He was done. That was it. You know, he wasn't going to put up with any, because, like, Stroman didn't do anything to get ejected. You know, you have to allow players to question your calls. He wasn't arguing balls and strikes. He was he just made a kind of a demonstrative gesture, and it wasn't even anything that bad. You know, then Martin, literally, he threw Martin out the minute he turned around. So this was just clearly an umpire who was having a bad day.
No, I mean, I know the consensus is, I mean, let's be honest, although I'm not the biggest fan, and I was completely wrong with the Mothership's broadcast last night. I thought it was David DeJesus in the booth when it was David Ross. And they were really, I don't know the words, but building them up. I have a lot of other things, but they're not really that appropriate. you know, oh, Chicago loves you. They'll never forget you. And then talking about his stats and blah, blah. I was like, you know, okay, Sutcliffe and other guy who is a broadcaster. I mean, I know you guys are having fun, but I don't know. It was just annoying the hell out of me. And then, you know, we didn't get the local broadcast, so I didn't know what channel it was on. So I ended up turning it off after a while because the Cubs had such a great lead. And just streaming it on the app while we watched another show. But they were just dragging it. But, like, you know, getting way off point, David Ross last year really dispelled the whole pitch framing crap. That it's more built on the relationship between the umpire and the catcher. And you and I both know if there's certain guys behind the plate as an umpire. Now I can't think of the name off the top of my head. But if it's outside, it's going to be a ball. But if it's inside, it's always going to be a strike, even though it appears to be a ball. And Eric Burns is a huge proponent of just eliminating the umpire and using the tracking system. And, you know, everyone thinks when they say a robot umpire, a lot of people think they literally mean, you know, Johnny Five behind home plate or iRobot or one of these robots. No, that is not the literal translation for what they mean. And they mean basically using the pitch tracking box, which I think, you know, is difficult sometimes when you do watch a ball and it's clearly out of the strike zone and yet they call it a strike. I mean, do you think it's not going to happen under Rob Manfred? Because while, let's be honest, because his agenda is only speeding up the game, he doesn't really care about, you know, any of the other issues that are involved in the game or non-issues. He only cares about speeding it up. And in his world, speeding it up would make the game better and more attractive. Although you and I have kind of discussed what would make it more attractive to a younger audience, social media stuff. But, I mean, do you think we'll eventually be able to move into an era where the behind-the-plate umpire is eliminated for balls and strikes?
Yeah, I do actually think so. I believe eventually, you know, as technology continues to evolve and, you know, that kind of stuff happens and, you know, baseball adapts, I do believe that one of these days we won't see a home plate umpire. It'll be done, a completely, automatic way, so to speak. I mean, robot, K-zone, whatever they're planning on using or however they develop it. I definitely think we will, so somewhere down the line, we will see that. I don't know if it's, 5 years out, 10 years out, 20 years out, who knows, but I definitely think we see it.
I'd like it to be 5 years out. I mean, do you think it all plays in a role too where, and I bring this up to you all the time when I say we should say, Major League Baseball should do this, they should do that. And you always say, well, they won't because, that'll phase out a guy's job, i.e. eliminating the DH on the American League. That was, an old guy loses his job. Do you think as we start to see some of these umpires, i.e. Joe West, who I think is the one who we both know is a strike zone is going to be the way it is, there's no changing it. When these guys start to retire, maybe they won't get replaced as quickly, and then we could start to phase out that umpire behind the home plate.
Yeah, I definitely think it's something they're going to have to figure out. I mean, you mentioned the difficult part of it is going to be getting the umpires union to agree with it. Mm-hmm. You are talking, it's not like they're trying to wipe out, every umpire. They're just, they're kind of looking at one. I think it's something they can definitely work out. That's always a standing issue. But I know the beginning of this year, they mentioned that they were having a difficult time finding qualified umpires. And you wonder if that's going to lay the groundwork to where maybe this picks up a little speed.
Yeah. Because it seems like it's definitely on our side of the country. It's the same guys throughout the game. And I mean, I'd be happier if we had more, of a solid New York booth of referees where they're not really rotated in and out, where you've got guys strictly in there watching the game and one referee per game. I think that would stuff the game much better. And not only that, I think one of the biggest reasons why they should have eliminate the ump behind the plate is, number one, you can't argue balls and strikes with an umpire or he throws you out,
right?
Even though he's completely wrong. And that's not fair either. Yeah. That's not right. And what does that do? What does that do, Big Jack, when you've got an umpire and a pitcher and a catcher and a coach arguing with the umpire and he's just throwing guys out? What does that do to the game, Big Jack? It makes it longer.
Oh, look at that.
Can't have that.
I don't even get the chance to answer. Oh, the music came before I could even give you my answer. Damn. All right, Dan and I are taking off, but we're coming back at 5:30 to do this all again tomorrow. You know the deal while we're gone. SportsTimeRadio.com. Get over there. Check out the new blog from yesterday. Link over to the Facebook page. Give that a like. Get yourself on the Twitter feed at SportsTimeRadio. See what's going on there. You can also follow Dan and I on Twitter if you'd like. We'd appreciate that. As always, a big thanks for listening live. It's fantastic when you do that, but don't forget, you can find the podcast anytime you want at TuneIn.com.